You're listening live to Right Side Radio with Bill Williams. It's hard to go wrong when you're on the right side. Right Side Radio, solid, conservative, and just plain right.
Alabama's syndicated news talk leader, Right Side Radio. Phil Williams here live in the Right Side Studios. Man, we got the local, the state, the national covering down on all of the issues. And like the dude just said, solid conservative and just plain right. Well, it is it's midweek. Boomer's on the board. Hey, brother, how you doing?
I'm awesome.
You got your finger on the trigger, don't you?
I'm ready.
Play it.
Uh-oh. Guess what day it is. Guess what day it is. Mike. What day is it, Mike? Leslie, guess what today is?
It's hump day.
Woo-hoo! I was ready.
You were. Y'all can't see, but Boomer's got a rack of buttons over there, and he has his finger on. There's actually a button with a camel on it.
There is. I put a camel on it, so it would just make me happy.
Did it make you happy?
It did.
All right.
It did.
Nice. Well, yeah, happy camel day. Happy hump day. You're halfway to the weekend, and I know that some of y'all are probably going to wind up being off Friday because Christmas is over the weekend, so blessings on you if that's the case. If not, the rest of you are halfway to Saturday, so just hang in there. It's coming. We got a great show lined up for you. So 3 o'clock today, John Wall, he's the chairman of the Alabama Republican Party, the statewide party. Chairman John Wall will be on with us at 3 o'clock. Going to talk to him about the fact that, you know, there's a call for new leadership at the RNC National. What's going to happen with that? That's going to be a part of my dippers for the day. We'll talk through it because leadership matters. And, you know, do you reward leaders who lose on a regular basis? I would say no. But anyway, we'll talk about it with Chairman John Wall, and then among other things. Number two, I'll tell you what. First, I get to the Grand Council. I almost jumped right in the dippers there, bud. But the Grand Council's at 4 o'clock. So Grand Council with my brethren Jeff Poor and Dale Jackson, they will be on with us at 4 o'clock, as always, on a Wednesday afternoon. So it's gonna be a full afternoon. That plus the Triple Dipper. Hit it.
The Triple Dipper. Three stories you've got to know.
That's right, the Triple Dipper, three stories, three themes, if you will, that you have got to know as we do today's show. Number one, I'm calling it Re-Blue the GOP. All right, now some of you are gun guys out there, gun ladies probably, and if you're rehabilitating an old worn-out firearm, you know, what you have to do sometimes is what's called re-bluing. The bluing is what the dark color on the barrel and on the mechanics that actually protects it. It provides a coating that protects it from getting all rusty and kind of worn out. Well, when the bluing goes bad, sometimes if you're going to keep that gun alive and kicking, you might have to re-blue it. So I'm saying it's time to re-blue the GOP. We'll talk about that, number one on the Triple Dipper. Number two, oh, Lord, the Spendorama. We are on the verge of finding out whether or not they're going to do a $1.7 trillion Democrat-led but Republican-aided spending package that is completely unnecessary right now. They could do a continuing resolution and then allow Republicans to have a say since we just won the election. I got some angst over this. We're going to talk about it. Number two on the Triple Dipper, the Spendorama. And then number three, the Obfuscation Nation. If you're not familiar with obfuscation, well, if you obfuscate, you are basically clouding the facts. You're making it difficult to discern the truth. You are someone who is answering but yet not answering. You're obfuscating. Well, the Obfuscation Nation. We're going to cover down on some things where you ask a question or you try to figure out why that happened and you never can get the straight answer. I love it when liberals run the Obfuscation Nation. So that's number three on the Triple Dipper. Hey, let me jump over to my comments, though. So I got to tell you, man, early this morning when I'm getting the show ready, I couldn't help but notice that a legend passed away today. Some of y'all are paying attention. I know you saw it. Franco Harris, the legendary Hall of Famer football player who starred with the legendary Pittsburgh Steelers of the early 70s. I mean, Franco Harris was a bull in a china shop, man. He ran with a reckless abandon. He was also the man who became known as the player who holds the title of greatest play in the history of the NFL, known as the Amazing Immaculate Reception. A literally miraculous game-winning catch in the final seconds of a 1972 playoff game against the Raiders. Go look it up, because we were watching it on the screen here in the studio a minute ago, Boomer and I. But yeah, Franco Harris. He was a four-time Super Bowl champion, a Super Bowl MVP. He went on to the Pro Bowl 9 times. Harris is also the only player in history to have scored 4 Super Bowl touchdowns in 4 separate Super Bowls, by the way. Like I said, legend. What's interesting, though, is that he was one of several legends on the same team. The 72 Steelers were up there with the Chicago Bulls of the early 90s, the 1927 New York Yankees with Lou Gehrig and Babe Ruth, teams of men who inspired others and wowed the crowds. There was always something surrounding these teams that sort of seemed unreal. You could find highlights and statistics and wonder aloud, how did they do that? Back to Franco Harris, though. When I read of his death this morning, which incidentally came just days before, literally days, before the Steelers were going to retire his number and celebrate the 50th anniversary of the Immaculate Reception, when I read of his passing, I was reminded of another member of the 72 Steelers, a guy named Rocky Blyer. Some of y'all remember him. Rocky Blyer was the other major ball runner for the Steelers at that time. He played his first season with the Steelers in 1968, but then his number came up for the draft, and without quibbling over it or trying to find an exemption, Rocky Blyer left the NFL, left his career behind. He went to basic training and became an infantry soldier. In 1969, he was an E-4 assigned to the Marical Division in Vietnam when his platoon was ambushed in a rice paddy and took severe casualties. Rocky Blyer himself, the football player, was shot in the hip, and he suffered additional heavy wounds in his legs from a grenade blast. Blyer was awarded the Bronze Star and the Purple Heart, but as he lay in a hospital bed in Tokyo, the doctors told him he would never play football again. Well, soon after that, he got a postcard from Steelers owner Art Rooney, and it simply read, "Rock, the team's not doing well. We need you, Art." So several surgeries later, Rocky Blyer began training, and he wound up rejoining the Steelers roster just the very next year. He went on to play in 4 Super Bowls. He's also the 4th leading rusher in Steelers history. I'm telling you, man, they don't make them like that very often. In fact, as I was thinking through all this, I found myself wondering, do they make them like that at all anymore? Well, that's a rhetorical question, all right? God's the one that makes them. That's a fact. But are men like that a rarer breed now? I don't know, but I do know that there has been a huge amount of focus placed on the emasculation of manhood over the last several years. So yeah, God makes them, but he calls upon us as dads and mentors and bosses and teachers and leaders to train them. In an age when young boys are too often encouraged to believe that maybe they are actually women, or when overactive emergent imaginations and insecurities lead some to believe that calling themselves a furry is actually acceptable, when young men find it reasonable to just accept a government bailout of their student loan and are told they can justify it because soldiers get a GI Bill, when phrases like toxic masculinity are thrown around liberally to devalue the ideals of strong manhood. Now, do I sound old-fashioned? I hope so, because I don't like what I'm seeing in the new-fashioned. Teddy Roosevelt once said, "We do not admire the man of timid peace. We admire the man who embodies victorious effort, the man who never wrongs his neighbor, who is prompt to help a friend, but who has those virile qualities necessary to win in the stern strife of actual life." But y'all, that kind of manhood, it takes effort. It also takes modeling. It takes teaching. We're told in Proverbs to raise up a child in the way they should go. When they get old, they will not depart from it. Well, young boys need to see old men acting respectfully, working hard, loving well, and giving generously. I still remember to this day my dad actually instructing me to open the door for a lady. He also taught me which side of the lady a man should walk on while on a public sidewalk near a busy road. Some of you know exactly what I mean. My father and my grandfathers, both of them, taught me the value of hard work and of hard play. So with a childhood filled up with scraped knees and bruised shins and muddy shoes and holes in the pants legs, those are just part of life. And you put on a Band-Aid, you snuck a cookie, and you ran out back to keep on doing life. It's not too much to ask for the man to step in when he sees a wrong, or when something goes bump in the night. A real man takes care of those things. Do they still make them like that? See, boys and girls are different. I know that sounds radical, but they are. Sure, I mean, there's tomboys, and I've known some women who could outrace most men, but that's not what I'm referring to. There should be no effort in a sane and productive society to coach young men how to be young women and vice versa. Men should not be proud of pretending that a dude winning awards in women's athletics makes them a star athlete. But all of this takes mentoring. It takes modeling. It takes effort to demonstrate that having the ability to be strong must by necessity involve some self-control, that being intelligent must also be joined with wisdom, that real men are comfortable being the man that God made them to be, and that is an intentional thing. That is a design that has been refined. It's a mature, grown man who is a product of an upbringing that is as it was intended, intentionally and deliberately raised as he should have been to be a man. Rudyard Kipling wrote a classic poem to his son. I won't read the whole thing, but it's worth reading. It's a series of life lessons on being a man, from a father to a son. And it closes out with these lines. If you can force your heart and nerve and sinew to serve your turn long after they are gone, and so hold on when there is nothing in you except the will which says to them, hold on. If you can talk with crowds and keep your virtue, or walk with kings nor lose the common touch, if neither foes nor loving friends can hurt you, if all men count with you but none too much, if you can fill the unforgiving minute with 60 seconds worth of distance run, yours is the earth and everything that's in it. And what is more, you'll be a man, my son. We need more manly men. In a day and age when they tell us that men can't be manly, I say that's bunk. We need to model, we need to teach, we need to mentor. We need to raise them up to be that which they ought to be so when they grow old, they won't get apart from it. And that's a wrap for the Right Side Way. Well, there you have it. I can think of the mentors in my life. Some of y'all can too. I also know that there's those out there who don't have them. That's why it's so important that we be willing to give back, even if it's not our own child. You know, we look at things like big brothers, big sisters, and what we can do in church and who leads our Sunday school. I can remember those important men in my life who weren't my family, but they were important in my life. Think about it. Raise them up. Raise up the next level of manhood, because right now, it's lacking. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Y'all stay tuned. We'll be right back. And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Solid conservative. Just plain right. Oh, man. I'm telling you what, we got all kinds of things going on today. I'm watching for the breaking news. There's a press conference going on just a few minutes ago with U.S. senators, Republican senators, talking about the spending bill, which we're going to spend some time on today. I'll get to that. But I can't tell yet what they were saying because I'm on the air talking. So I'll be checking that during the next break to make sure there's no updates. Although I did see that McCarthy has now broken ranks with McConnell. So this is a big deal. So McCarthy is the majority leader in the House, McConnell being the Senate Republican minority leader, actually, in the Senate. You know, it's always good when you can see House and Senate leadership kind of working together and in tandem on issues, and we're not seeing that right now. McCarthy is saying, don't do the spending bill. Why would you do this? So we're going to talk about that as the day goes on. We also just had a big event at the White House as Ukrainian President Zelensky just did a White House meeting with President Biden. And I don't know the full content of that. I know it's been considered somewhat controversial because it's almost as if we've given him a blank check. I am for stopping the Russians. I don't want to see Ukraine continue to be pounded unnecessarily. Let's remember the Russians just invaded without provocation. This was just because they wanted their land. They wanted their stuff. This was bullies. However, at some point, we have to have some measure of full accountability, and the blank check is a little concerning. So we're going to wait and see how this meeting went today, and may wind up having a whole dipper on that tomorrow. Anyway, lots of stuff. And then there's also the fact, I got to tell you guys, too, by the way, I just had a text from Tyler from Huntsville. He reminded me of one of my original openers. I used to always say, I would tell people, if you find yourself getting outside the overly broad range of our AM/FM capabilities, you can always go to our website, rightsideradio.org, click on Listen Live, and no matter where you is, there we is. That's what I used to always say. And it's funny how you have a thing you say every day, and then you forget about it. But that's what I used to always say. But it's true, though. You can still do that. Rightsideradio.org. Man, it's got all our stuff. I mean, all our stuff. Boomer, how much stuff do we have on there? I mean, it's like, how much more can you fit into one website?
Oh, man, I don't know. I guess we just got to keep throwing things out there until see when it crashes. Then we'll just have to go back one.
I tell you one thing, and now that I'm saying it on the air, we're like getting stuck with it. But, you know, you and I have talked about, I do the triple dipper every day, and I have all these articles that go with the dippers that I research for the show. You help me prepare them, get them ready. We've talked about posting those on the website, so if folks want to go back to an article they heard me talk about, they can find it. So we're going to figure that out sometime soon, stuff like that. The other thing we got on there, though, was all the podcasting. So if you are a podcaster, you're a listen-after-the-fact kind of person, or you heard something you liked and you want to hear it twice or send a link of it to a friend, because you can do that. In fact, Boomer, we had somebody, I forwarded you the email yesterday, who was trying to find one of our former podcasts from an old show.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and it's just, you can do that. You can go, hey.
Here it is.
Did they do that thing with Stephen Curtis Chapman? Yes, we did. Hey, who's that Delta Force guy? That'd be General Boykin. I want to go back and hear that again. So all those, Ted Nugent. Did Ted Nugent really cuss out Boomer? Well, kind of, sort of.
We left that part out, though.
We bleeped that part. Yeah, that was.
We talked about it.
That was during a break. Anyway, all those old podcasts are there. Every single day, Boomer, in all his technical prowess, literally takes the show, posts it out there, and then also breaks it down into manageable pieces. So if you don't want the whole show, you can get just a certain interview or a certain segment of a dipper. And they're out there. We've had we're like almost 103,000 downloads right now of the podcast. Second biggest audience still California. Hello, California. We love you. Keep doing what you're doing. We're there for you. We're gonna stay there for you.
Cali.
All right. Hey, listen. The first section of the Triple Dipper. Re-blew the GOP. Boomer, you're a gun guy.
Oh yes.
Oh yeah. What do you call that something coding you were just going to do the other day?
Cerakoting.
Cerakoting. Mm-hmm. And what is that?
So it's a type of paint, and you basically sand your gun down, and then you get to paint it.
Any color you want, basically.
Any color you want, yeah.
Okay. Well, that's the modern version of what we used to call bluing. All right? So yeah, you're coating the moving parts in such a way that it protects them and makes them appear shiny and new.
Yes.
All right. All right, there's an old phrase, and maybe we use it in the military more, I don't know, but we're talking about re-bluing something. That's when you're trying to take something, make it fresh. That's when you take something that's kind of worn down, jaded, and not maybe doing what it's supposed to be doing, and it's starting to get a little rusty, a little bit, under the weather, and you re-blue it. That means in a weapon, what you do is you're restoring the weapon. You're taking it, you're actually boiling off all the old layers of old bluing, which is no longer, you've seen them. Worn down where you can see the hands have been and, you know, it's got nicks and scratches and dents, and you re-blue it. Well, when you re-blue things, you make it fresh and new, all right? Number one of the triple dipper we're going to talk about here when we get back, I'm calling it re-bluing the GOP. We just lost those freaking midterms, and there was no excuse for it. We were not doing things well. We need to re-blue the GOP. So, yeah, as we move forward, we're going to talk about what that means, what was wrong, what could have been done differently. And then top of the hour, we're going to come right back with Chairman John Wall of the Alabama Republican Party and get his thoughts on it. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Y'all stay tuned. We'll be right back. Hey, all you right side ruffians out there, you are listening to Right Side Radio, solid conservative, just plain right. And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio, solid conservative, just plain right. Covering down on some ground across the northern half of our state. Where are we? We're from down south of Birmingham, going all the way up north of Huntsville, Tuscaloosa, back over to Gadsden, parts of Georgia, Tennessee, and Mississippi, thrown in just for good measure. I just saw something on Twitter, by the way. The Zelensky meeting, so President and Mrs. Biden met Zelensky when his caravan rolled up at the front door of the White House. And this guy that I follow on Twitter just tweeted out, you know, it's already in the bag when you show up in sweatpants to pick up your $47 billion. Because Zelensky came to the meeting dressed just like he does back home. He's wearing the green sweatshirt with the symbol of the Ukrainian army on the front. He's not putting on air. I think part of it was he probably felt like it would look bad for his troops to be in the field, and he's all duded up and having a state dinner. So anyway, okay, we'll talk about more of that when we find out more about what they talked about. But apparently there has been a commitment for more money to Ukraine. And the question I have is, has there been a commitment for more accountability, and will Ukraine follow suit on that? We'll see. We'll see. All right, re-blueing the GOP. By the way, someone caught my joke. I was telling Charlene this morning, re-blue the GOP, and I kind of like wink, wink, nod, nod, because blue is the Democrat color, right? Yeah. So, who was it? Just texted that in. Darn it. I lost my place. Was it Paul from Athens? I think it was. Yep, it was. It was Paul from Athens texted in, says, being the GOP, wouldn't it be to re-red? See, caught my joke there. I'm a little concerned with the number of blue people that I see in the red party. Thank you, Paul, for being the guy who caught my pun intended. Listen, here's the deal. We got to do an after-action review. It's got to be an honest after-action review. So I used to, and this is a thing from the military, after-action review just simply means you sit down after the event and you run through it. An after-action review, a good honest one, you try to find what you call your ups and your downs. Two ups, two downs. Two good things that should be repeated, two bad things that should not be repeated. If you're honest, you will find the downs as well as the ups. At my law firm this morning, we had that same conversation. We had a situation for a client that, you know, we weren't satisfied with the full outcome. So three of us lawyers sat down, and we had about 5 minutes where we said, all right, what are the ups and downs? What's the after-action review say? How do we do this better next time? Not that we failed. There was no failure at all. It was just like, okay, I feel like it could have been smoother. I feel like we could have gotten there quicker. We went through it, and we decided, all right, we got to do this different. Let's make sure this protocol is in place, and all right, here we go. Well, we got to do the same thing with the 2022 midterms. For conservatives, this was a loss. Now, did we win back the House? Yeah, we did. We did not win back the Senate, and yet experts across the board say you could not have had a better stage set for a red wave. I got out there and said, I think we're going to wind up seeing 52 to 53 senators on the Republican side. Didn't happen. I thought we were going to take back the House, but we're going to have a bigger majority than we do. Didn't happen. The only good thing about having a smaller majority in the House is that we may very well now have the ability for conservatives to have a greater voice, because McCarthy needs every member of the Freedom Caucus. He can't do without them because the majority is so narrow. All right, that being said, what caused it? What are some things that caused the red wave to be a nothing burger? All right. Well, National Review has a piece that came out on December 19th, so just 2 days ago. I thought it was perfect. And if you remember, by the way, some of what I'm about to read you from them, I've been talking about on the show. One of the things that I've talked about more than once is there is zero excuse for going into an election without a published agenda, without a plan, without something to rally the troops, a contract for America. Now, towards the end of the election cycle, McCarthy did have that in the House. It was a little bit, you know, nondescript. I felt like some of the things that he was citing as part of their agenda in the House could have been, you know, better defined, a little more active? Did they spend the money to promote it? We had the money to work with. But right now what we're seeing is the Senate did not. So the 2022 midterm elections, according to this article from National Review, had all the makings of a red wave, but there were several issues that held Republicans back, according to one GOP pollster named Wes Anderson. Anderson said the ingredients for the wave were all there. A majority of respondents were saying the country was on the wrong track, 68%. President Biden had a 53% disapproval rating. Among independents, 44% approved of the job the president was doing, while 52% disapproved. I mean, all the ups and downs were in place when it comes to the thoughts and the sentiments of the populace. But Anderson said, here you go, key, you ready? Republicans lost voters by offering no plan, no agenda, no hint of what they will do. In fact, he said in the Senate, they bragged about not having a thing, such a thing. The poll found that 27% of independent voters did not know what the Republican message was. Can you imagine? You're asking people to go vote for you, and 27% of those who are not already a part of your party, the swing voters, the ones who kind of go back and forth and you don't know which way they're going to vote, so you got to win them over. Every single time, you got to win them over. The poll found that 27% of independent voters did not even know what the Republican message was. Anderson dubbed the 2022 midterm terms the Seinfeld election. If you're ever a fan of Seinfeld, you know that there are times when watching Seinfeld, it was called the comedy about nothing. Well, he said this was a Seinfeld election because it was an election about nothing. He said one shining example, though, of how to do it right was one Senate race for Republican Ron Johnson up in Wisconsin. He said they spent a significant amount of money, they created a unified, disciplined message, and they went out there and they touted what they were going to do. That's key. That's huge. That's called leadership. Well, here's a story from Axios. Phil, did you go to Axios? Yes, I did. Axios from December of last year. December of last year. Mitch McConnell told his colleagues and donors that Senate Republicans would not release their legislative agenda before the midterms. Why? Why? Why would you ever go into plan without a battle without a plan? Why would you ever try to put together the puzzle without some idea of where you're headed? Why? It makes no sense. And it's also part of why we lost. Why it matters? According to this article from Axios, every midterm cycle, there are Republican donors and operatives who argue the party should release a positive, proactive, governing outline around which candidates can rally. Does that sound familiar? I'm sorry. Did I say that on the show? Yes, I did. McConnell adamantly rejects that idea. It's time for McConnell to go. Can I just go ahead and step out on the limb and say, if we're going to re-blue the GOP, it is time for McConnell to stop being the guy in charge of the Senate majorities and minorities or whatever we have. It's this time. How dare you claim the mantle of authority when you sat there and presided over mediocrity and you said you were not going to put out a plan? McConnell's response when he was asked in a fundraiser in November of last year about a Republican plan for the Senate races, he said that would not be something that they would be doing. He has long held the view, it says, that putting out an agenda is a mistake. What? God, I don't even understand this. I do not get it at all. But, you know, in terms of re-blueing the GOP, understand this, too, that Kevin McCarthy, who is right now running for Speaker of the House, he's having trouble even getting the majority he needs to take the position of authority. Here's a story from Washington Examiner. Washington Examiner. McDaniel, Ronald McDaniel, for the chairwoman of the National Party, is not alone in facing midterm election blowbacks from the party. House Minority Leader Kevin McCarthy is facing a brutal path toward the speakership and amid defections from the rightward flank of the House Republican caucus. So yeah, we got issues here. We've got definite categories, definite trends, definite things we can see if the after-action review is going to be honest. And if we're going to re-blue the GOP, re-blue the red side, that's what I should have called it, re-blue the red side, then you got to look at what went wrong and make corrective action. But right now, putting the exact same people in charge to do the exact same things is like a guarantee of mediocrity again. I got a caller on line one. Boomer, let me go and take that real quick while I catch my breath. Is that Steve? Steve from Tennessee. How you doing, brother?
Hey, Phil. I'm doing fine. I'm going to try to hold my temper down, but when you mentioned McConnell, man, I had a physical the other day. My blood pressure is doing great, but I have a feeling it's not doing so good right now. That guy doesn't want anybody elected that's not going to be a McConnell, line up and vote for McConnell guy.
Yeah, totally.
That's
agree.
All it is. I think he went, he may have gone out a little bit for Johnson, but he's the guy, I think, that has manipulated this thing to ensure what's good for him and not what's good for us.
Yeah,
that's what I think.
I totally agree, man. I can't imagine why we keep rewarding him with leadership, because we're not.
I don't either. And then you throw in some election fraud here and there that's actually, I think, more significant than people want to admit. Mm. And you got a formula for long term. We're just anchored down, man. The fleet can't float. We're just sitting there at anchor, and that's where we're going to be unless we fix those two problems.
Yeah.
Election integrity and leadership in the Senate's got to get fixed.
Yeah, and I'm going to go ahead and say, too, leadership in the House and at the National Party. I think that's all got to be done.
Yeah. The House and the National Party, too, I agree with you. It's all one and the same. It's all the same mess.
Hey, man, thanks
good,
for the call.
Good, I appreciate what you're saying.
Thanks, buddy. Merry Christmas.
Same to you. All right. Bye.
Bye. He's always got good content. And I'll tell you what. So before we go to the break, here's a story I've told before. I'll tell it again. A few years back when Jeff Sessions stepped down from the U.S. Senate to take the position of Attorney General, Governor Bentley had, by law, the ability to fill his seat, had to appoint somebody. If you remember, it wound up being Luther Strange, which was a debacle. But in the course of that, there were about, I think, seven people that were on Bentley's shortlist, and I had the honor of being one of them. So I was interviewed by Governor Bentley. I'll never forget sitting down with the governor in his office, and he's interviewing me about possibly being an ex-U.S. senator, and he has a sticky note sitting there on the table, and he grabs the sticky note, and he goes, "Look at this. It's McConnell calling me for the third time today." He said, "I got to call him back. You know what he said to me the other day?" And this is Bentley talking. I said, "No, what?" He said, "Whatever you do, don't send me one of those Freedom Caucus types." And I thought to myself, well, I'm not getting the job. And I didn't. Luther Strange got it, which I guess means he wasn't one of those Freedom Caucus types. But, yeah, that's where that was. And you can tell McConnell does not like true conservatives. He doesn't want somebody coming up there who's going to make waves, who's going to ask for fiscal accountability, who's going to say, "Hey, let's have a plan." He's content to just, "Well, we're going to continue to say that we're going to move forward in mediocrity." Take me to a break, Boomer. We'll come right back. We're going to wrap this up a little bit and then move to the top of the hour with a phone call with Chairman John Wall of the Alabama Republican Party. By the way, they're doing some very cool stuff that I'll tell you about more in a minute, too, besides just politics. I like it. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Y'all stay tuned. We'll be right back. We are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Solid conservative, just plain right. Saving the world one soundbite at a time. Hey, the text lines have gone crazy. Apparently Mitch McConnell's very popular, or maybe unpopular is better put. Ben from Decatur says, "McConnell must go. Can't say it enough. Not a leader and not sure why he wins elections as a leader." I agree, Ben. Brian from Huntsville, "No plan. Mitch McConnell, Vader. Saying, I find your lack of faith disturbing." Yeah. John from Lexington, South Carolina. Hang on a second. He sent a picture and I can't tell what it is. Oh, John from Lexington, South Carolina says Emperor Mitch McConnell pledges to crush the Tea Party rebellion. Yeah, he's literally sent a headline from 2014 about how Mitch McConnell hated the Tea Party. Daniel from Tullahoma says China Mitch McConnell didn't back the Republican candidates. He kept funding away from them and sabotaged them. I think that's what happened with Blake Masters out in Arizona, by the way. I'm trying to think what else I see on here. I think that's about it for Mitch McConnell right now, but I got line one. I got Jeff from Indiana on the line. Jeff Rowe, how you doing today?
I'm doing pretty good. This is my last day till next year.
Oh, you taking some time off,
I'm a happy camper. Yeah, the plant's shutting down, so I'm off in whether I want to or not.
Well, good deal, man. Hope you enjoy it. Hope you get rested and refreshed.
Yeah, I need it, I tell you.
Well, what's on your mind?
The Republican leadership is why most conservative Republicans would love to jump ship and go to a different party if there was one, a viable party out there. I mean, it's so frustrating to see. Basically, we need to send the Republicans to the Democrat training camp because they know how to stick together. If there's one thing the Democrats do, is they are in lockstep, buddy.
Yeah, you know, it's funny you say that. I mean, I know there's infighting in their caucus meetings, but for the most part, when the Democrats come out of the caucus meeting, they tend to move in the same directions. And I'll be honest with you, they did some things during their election. They've got it down when it comes to their social media, their branding, their advertising. They did a better job in the midterms than the Republicans did by far.
Oh, yeah, everything. What really grabs me is that, you know, even when we're in the power and the majority and everything, we don't do nothing. Do you think the Republicans will ever hold Joe Biden accountable for anything? I mean, you know, the Democrats are going after Trump. If the man picks his nose, it's like, oh, it's time to impeach him, you know.
Yeah.
So, but Joe Biden can sit there and basically be a traitor. And they won't do nothing to him.
No, it's just crazy.
It is crazy,
and that's a leadership thing because Mitch. Now, I think that Kevin McCarthy is going to, if he gets the leadership position, whoever gets the leadership position in the House, I think they're going to hold hearings and they're going to do things. They still require the Senate though for impeachment processes, and I don't know that Mitch McConnell will ever let something come forward like he should. Now, I will say this: one thing Mitch McConnell did right was he got a lot of Trump's judicial picks in place, so the federal court system was beefed up. That's about all I can point to, though, over his tenure. I mean, I really don't know what else to point to.
The turtle needs to go. He needs to bury his. We need to send the turtle out to sea.
Well, no doubt. All right, man. Hey, be careful on the road. Enjoy your time off. I hope that even though you're going to be on some time off, you'll still listen in and call in. All right.
Oh yeah, we'll take care of it.
All right, buddy. See you, man.
I'll talk to you later, Phil.
Merry Christmas.
See you, bud.
Let me throw something else in there too. The youth vote. I think that one of the things that's going to have to happen for Republicans to be successful, they've got to recoup some with Gen Z. And I'm always reluctant to brand, you know, groups like the boomers and the no pun intended there, bud. Gen Z and Gen X and whatever. But let's go ahead and assume for now that there is a Gen Z. Well, They've got their notions, they vote, and yet I've got a piece here from Fox News. It was written by a young lady named Carolyn Leavitt, who actually ran for Congress unsuccessfully, but she ran, and she ran on a very conservative platform. And she says, "I just turned 25 a few weeks prior to winning the GOP nomination in New Hampshire. I was raised to appreciate our nation's fundamental values of faith, family, and freedom, values that are uncommon and unpopular among my peers. Gen Z has been indoctrinated to be faithless, anti-American, self-proclaimed socialists who care about changing their gender more than about paying their bills." She points out, though, the 2022 midterms were the first electoral test on the impact of Gen Z Americans, and Republicans failed miserably. 18 to 29-year-olds, she says, flooded the polls to cast their ballots for Democrat candidates. In House races like hers, she said, 63% of Gen Z Americans voted Democrat. 63%. In all races nationwide, 18 to 29-year-olds voted Democrat by 28 points. God, that's hard. That's hard stuff, man. She says by 2024, Gen Z and millennials will make up nearly half of the electorate, replacing the baby boomers once and for all. Folks, we got to do a better job. Got to do a better job. More on this when we get back with Alabama Republican Party Chairman John Wall. We'll be right back. Side ruffians out there, you are listening to Right Side Radio, solid conservative, just plain right.
You're listening live to Right Side Radio with Phil Williams. It's hard to go wrong when you're on the right side. Right Side Radio, solid, conservative, and just plain right.
Alabama's syndicated news talk leader, Right Side Radio. Phil Williams here live in the Right Side Studios. Man, we got the local, the state, the national covering down on all the issues. And like the dude just said, solid, conservative, and just plain right. By the way, later on in the show, we'll be going into the Spendorama occurring up in D.C. right now, the $1.7 trillion omnibus spending bill. I just noticed up on the screen here in the studio, Alabama Senator Tommy Tuberville was on Fox saying that this is just flushing cash. He's literally saying that we're just flushing cash. Now, I do believe, though, I think Tuberville may have voted in favor of allowing the bill to move forward, which I question. If you don't like it, then why would you do that? But I haven't seen a confirmation of a roll call on that, so grain of salt. But nonetheless, Tommy Tuberville saying not a fan of the spending, which he also said in an interview that came out on Yellowhammer, I believe, yesterday. All right, let me do this. So we got a guest coming on with us, somebody who's no stranger to this show. John Wall is the chairman of the Alabama Republican Party. He hails from the North Alabama region right here in our listening area. He is with us right now so we can talk about leadership and challenges within Republican Party leadership overall. Chairman Wall, how are you doing today?
You know, I'm doing very well, and it's great to be back on the show.
Well, I appreciate you being here today. Thanks for making time for us. So, Mr. Chairman, let me ask you this. Right up front, I'll just go ahead and say, I have already called for the idea of seeing a new leadership within the National Republican Party. Ronna McDaniel, she's been there for several terms. That's just me. I don't know how much you're willing or able to say, but I recognize that she's being challenged right now by Harmeet Dillon and by Mike Lindell, of all people. Your thoughts on where this is going during the winter meeting coming up and whether she'll still be the party chair?
You know, and I think there's going to be a lot of questions asked, and as there should be. You know, it's hard anytime you're going through a cycle where you don't have the results you expected to see. And for the Republican Party, that's not just this cycle. It's going back two or three cycles.
Yeah.
So, you know, I think there's definitely questions that need to be asked. For me, this goes deeper than just the chairman of the RNC. I really think there needs to be a fundamental shift within the National Republican Party. And let me explain what I see by that. You know, when I look across the country at where we did do well, because there were areas that we did. You know, you look here in Alabama, we picked up 50 seats for Republicans across the state of Alabama in an already very red state. You look at what Florida did with Governor Ron DeSantis taking 20 points in what is traditionally considered a swing state. And I think you have to ask yourself the question, why did these states have a red wave? Why did they produce? And I think when you look at the policies, that's what you see. You know, in Ron DeSantis' acceptance speech, he said his message to the Republican Party was, don't be afraid to be a bold conservative.
Yeah.
You know, don't be afraid to stand up for people's rights. Don't be afraid to stand up to these woke agendas, to the indoctrination in our schools. And so I think you see here in Alabama, you see a party that's very much targeted in that direction. I know that's my passion, my focus. You see that in some of the legislation that we've been able to get across the finish line with the State House and Senate passing transgender bills protecting our children, passing constitutional carry protecting people's rights, making vaccine mandates illegal in the state of Alabama, and protecting our workforce and our citizens from an out-of-control federal government. And so I think in those states, you saw people respond. And so I think that's the shift that I want to see in the national Republican Party. I want to see a Republican Party that is actively fighting and standing up for people.
Well, I totally agree. And I do think that, by the way, in the state of Alabama, we did a great job on the cultural side of policy, moving in the right conservative direction. I'm concerned about the fiscal side, and I'm certainly seeing that in D.C. right now with Republicans defecting to go and help Schumer pass a lame duck spending bill that you look at and think, why? Why? You know, Minority Leader McConnell is literally collaborating with the Democrats, and he's got his usual suspects, Murkowski and Romney and the rest of them, and our own Senator Shelby, for that matter, on his way out the door. They are looking at helping the Democrats pass their agenda when they don't have to. And so I question whether we should see leadership in not just the party, but whether we should see leadership change in the House and the Senate as well.
I mean, it's a great question. And, you know, this is something that the grassroots has been a question they've been asking for years. Why, when Republicans get control, do they not have the same backbone that the Democrats have? You know, when they're in a minority position, why do they not stand firm? You know, they need 60 votes for cloture in the Senate.
Right.
Where are these bold, strong conservatives? So, no, I think you're right. I think it goes across the board. We need people who are willing to stand and fight both on the social issues, on the policies, but also on the financial side, really just standing up for our country. And that's what it's about. It's about these America First agenda, you know, getting government back to serving the people. And the greatest risk to our country, if we're honest about it, is the national debt and our out of control spending. And yeah. That is actually what has taken out most great countries, most great empires throughout history, has been financially not being able to control themselves financially from within.
Well, so let me ask you this in terms of a way forward. You know, one of the things that truly frustrated me, and I was talking about it again earlier, was that Senator McConnell literally stated out loud, I mean, he used the outside words, inside words as outside words. He said he had no intention of putting forth an agenda. He didn't see the need to have a plan. Well, analysts are saying right now that's one of the reasons why the midterms were bad for the Senate, because we had no plan that people could rally around.
Well, and I was also very disappointed when he came out and said that he didn't really think we had quality candidates.
Yeah.
You know, that's one of those things. You can think that, but as a leader, you don't say it. You know, we need leaders in the Republican Party who fight for our candidates, who fight to win these elections. And they have to care and they have to work hard. And whatever he thinks, there is a time when you should just be quiet. You know, that's what I always say with Liz Cheney, right? But like Liz Cheney could have just been quiet. She didn't have to endorse policies she didn't agree with. She didn't have to, you know, she didn't have to go along with things she didn't like, but she didn't have to be aggressively against fellow Republicans.
Right.
I'm very disappointed with McConnell's statements in the midterm primary, in the midterm election for the general.
Let me ask you this: in terms of demographics of the Republican Party, I've got an article here that I talked about just briefly before you got on the air. Generation Z, the Gen Z Republicans, 18 to 29 year olds, they're about to be one of the largest voting blocks in the nation as boomers age out. But millennials and Gen Z are overwhelmingly right now voting Democrat. Have we got an initiative underway that you believe will start sort of capturing the hearts and minds of Gen Z? Do you see that as being something that we're headed towards?
No, it's incredibly important to me. You know, and sometimes I'm embarrassed to admit this, but I actually fall within the younger range of voters, right? So when I was elected, I was actually the youngest chairman in the country. So reaching out to young people is very important to me. But the sad truth is what I think we're seeing is we're reaping a culture that no longer respects work, no longer respects traditional values. And I put a large blame on our education system. I think we have got to get this. One of the reasons I'm passionate about the education system, if we don't get that under control, the next generation will be worse than what we're seeing now. The trend will continue. You know, I think that's something we have to look at because we're foolish if we don't watch the trend and expect more if we don't change our actions.
Well, I agree. I mean, and it's the old adage that the next generation are the ones that are going to be in charge. So we need to make sure. I did a whole segment on my monologue earlier today, and it was really geared towards manhood. But I was talking about the fact that raise up a child the way they should go, and when they get old, they will not depart from it. But some of that is true, and just across the board in terms of policy making and what do you want your country to look like when you're the ones who are old enough to run the country. And I think if we don't start instilling some of that and then reaching out to them at voting time in a manner and a means by which they can relate, and I'm talking like social media and, you know, captivating their attention in a manner that they relate to, we're going to lose that generation and we're going to pay for it at the polls.
I agree. And I think this is kind of the party's target towards that, because we do want, like you said, we want to reach out to them where they're at. But I think it's also where we have the chance to pick them up is to reason with them on a value level. And what I mean by that is when you think about what everyone wants, no matter what your social demographic is, no matter what your age range, no matter what your race, we all want to be safe. We all want to be successful. And we all want our children or future generations to have a good, bright future.
Yeah.
And when you think about those things, it is the policies of the Republican Party that best accomplish them. And I think that's incredibly important for us to get back to talking about the issues, not about personalities of leaders, but get back to those issues.
Yeah, and I think we've got to find a way to communicate that to the younger generation, and also, you know, to be more bold about reaching across demographic and racial lines to make sure that we're actually reaching all of society. And I don't mean we ought to factionalize people like the Democrats always do, where they divide you up into little small blocks, but I am saying that there's a means by which, even the Apostle Paul said, I have become all things to all people that I might win them all the more, meaning he knew his audience and he spoke to where they were.
Absolutely.
Well, hey, listen, I'll tell you what. Go ahead, Mr. Chairman. Go ahead.
Well, I was going to say that I know that's something that's near and dear to my heart. You know, when you look at, like I said, I come from the grassroots side of the party. And so when I'm looking at policy, my question always is, does this help people?
Yeah.
And if we're honest about it, take the free college, paying off people's college tuition. On surface, you're like, well, that's great. That helps students, right? But the truth is, when government gives out free money, there are consequences. And we see that with inflation right now. We're seeing a hit, and who it hits the most are the poor and the middle class and the young people who aren't as established yet. So I think also communicating the consequences of bad policy, because government policy has real world consequences.
Well, let me ask you this before we hit the break, and I want you to hold on during the break, and we'll talk about non-politics, some very cool things the party's working on right now, fundraising for veterans. But let me ask you this before we go to the break, just a yes or no. What do you think? Is Ronald McDaniel going to survive and be the chairman again after this next election cycle?
You know, I think right now he has the votes. It will be interesting to see. I think this is her high watermark. I think from here on out, she will lose votes between now and the election, and it'll be interesting to see whether that dips below the 50% needed.
All right, man. Well, I'll tell you what, Mr. Chairman, if you'll hold on during the break, we'll come right back. Talk about something that really caught my attention yesterday when you sent it out, about trying to help some veterans who have a need right now. And so if you'll hang on, we'll be right back, sir.
Sounds good.
All right, Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. All y'all stay tuned. We got more. We'll be right back. And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio, covering all of North Alabama. Solid conservative, just plain right, making it cool to be a conservative. Going back to the phones right now for the next few minutes with Chairman John Wall of the Alabama Republican Party. Hey, Mr. Chairman, listen, it really caught my attention yesterday. You sent out an email on your email address to all members of the Republican State Executive Committee, letting them know that you're basically putting your name on raising funds to help two guys, two Alabamians, who actually went to Ukraine to help Ukraine fight Russia, and they were captured, and all the expenses they've incurred by being able to come home. Talk to us about that for a minute.
Yeah, no, absolutely. You know, and I think we all watched their story. You know, it was covered across the country. It went worldwide, just the saga of them being captured, and then not knowing whether they were going to get out, and then the Saudi Arabian prince actually negotiating for their release, and then them getting to come home, you know, and both being veterans, you know, from Alabama, just watching that through the years, throughout this year. When I heard that the expenses, you know, there was no one who covered the expenses for them to get home, and that the family had put it on their credit card and still had debt, wow. I was just like instantly, I knew that was something that I wanted to help with. Especially with the holiday season coming up, you know, I thought, what a better way to give back than to give these two guys and their families, you know, a little bit of a gift here for Christmas.
Yeah, that's huge. And yeah, so just to refresh everybody's memory, these two guys, both of which are veterans in their own right prior to going to Ukraine, went over there on their own dime to serve and help. I know one of the guys was a Marine. The other one had been in the Army, I believe. I think they both served in Iraq and or Afghanistan. So how much money are you trying to raise? Do you have an idea what the goal is?
Well, and what I love about this is anything that we raise here on the grassroots level, right? Like any of your listeners that want to donate or the party members, anything they put towards this, we'll also have a couple larger donors who are going to match funds.
Oh, wow.
And our target, yes, our target on the with our GoFundMe, we started the GoFundMe, and our target with that is 5,000, which would then be matched to potentially up to 10,000.
Wow, that is
which would
cool.
cover which would cover all the travel expenses, pay that off, and give them a little bit extra.
So we have a website called www.praythemhome.net. That was their story, where people can read their story, find out more about them. But then you have a GoFundMe page also, right?
That is correct. And the easiest way to find that is to just go to our Facebook page, which just type in Alabama Republican Party on Facebook. And if you don't have a Facebook, visit our website, algop.org, give the headquarters a call, and they'll be able to take care of it all for you.
That's very cool. And by the way, this is not like you're going to start taking these lists of people that gave $5 and $10, $20, $50 to help these two veterans, and suddenly they're going to start getting mailouts all the time for other things they weren't trying to support. You're literally looking to just do something good for two people, right?
That's correct. These names, addresses go on nothing. This is just directly for this effort. It doesn't go through the party or to the party, directly to these families, helping them out, and never another whisper from the party as far as fundraising goes.
Well, I'm going to be honest with you. Which
I promise, the Alabama Republican Party is not as bad as some of the other organizations across the country, just for your information.
Well, I'll be honest with you, though. I really appreciate the fact that this is I don't remember seeing this before. This is a totally, and I would call this even a bipartisan thing, this is a totally philanthropic opportunity. The party is in charge of it, but you're doing it for reasons that aren't political. You're looking at two guys who've incurred a lot of debt just to be allowed to fly home because they had to pay their own expenses to get home from, you know, when they were rescued. And then they had all their expenses of, you know, not getting paid and things along the way. And some would say, well, they went on their own steam. They knew the risk. You know what? I don't care. I think this is a good thing to do for good, you know, good dudes who tried to do the right thing. And so I appreciate y'all taking the stand.
No, and we feel the same way. You know, and for me, like you said, this is not about politics or even the politics of the Ukraine war, whatever side you're on. This is about two Alabamians, veterans, who stood up for what they believed in, and we didn't know if they were going to make it home. And this Christmas, they get to be home with their families when they didn't even know if they would survive. So, yeah. No, it's a great story, and we're glad to be able to just give a little bit back. You know, the Republican Party loves our veterans. We support our veterans, and this is just a small way we can give back.
All right. Well, Republican Party Chairman John Wall, thanks so much for spending time with us today. We appreciate your insights, and I look forward to having you back on again sometime soon.
Oh, always a pleasure, and I look forward to it.
All right, take care. Merry Christmas.
Yeah, to you.
All right, folks, listen, yeah, that as we wrap this up, that I saw that last night, and when I was texting him about coming on the show, I said, hey, I just got this email. We need to talk about this thing with these veterans. So these guys, Alex Druki, I believe his name is, and Andy Hun, they were captured in Kharkiv in June of this year. Remarkable story. The nationwide news. They made it home. They're Alabamians, but they incurred a huge amount of debt just being able to come home from captivity. And so you want to check them out. There's a GoFundMe page. There's a story about them on their website called praythemhome.net. Praythemhome.net. And $5, $10, just sacrifice one pizza. You might actually do a good thing to help build some money up for them to pay back the debt they incurred just to come home. All right, Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Y'all stay tuned. We'll be right back. Hey, all you Right Side ruffians out there, you are listening to Right Side Radio, solid conservative, just plain right. And we are back, Phil Williams, Right Side Radio, covering all of North Alabama, solid conservative, just plain right. I'm talking about we are down south of Birmingham, all the way to up north of Huntsville. We got Tuscaloosa back over to Gadsden, parts of Georgia, Tennessee, and Mississippi thrown in just for good measure. Hey, listen, before we go any further, I got to tell you guys, so my friends at the law firm of Riley and Jackson, they have been just kicking it right now. They got several things going right now that are there to actually benefit veterans. You may have heard about the Camp Lejeune water contamination cases. Well, like 19 different illnesses, they tell me, have been attributed to a confirmed water contamination that went on for decades at Camp Lejeune. So if you were stationed there, if you were there on training, if you were there for TDY, if you were a dependent, not just a service member, but actually a dependent, at Camp Lejeune, anywhere between 1953 and 1987, you may qualify for a claim. Here's the other one they're working on. If you're a firefighter, or for that matter, you were in the military and you used firefighting foam, well, there's a firefighting foam that has been determined to be carcinogenic, and there are some major cancers that are attributed to the use of this foam. You may qualify for a claim if you were a first responder or a military member using firefighting foam. Here's how you find out. Just call Riley and Jackson. They're based in Birmingham, but they operate statewide. Riley and Jackson, here's their number, 205-879-5000. That's 205-879-5000. Just talk to them, free call. You'll talk to a real person. These are friends of mine, by the way. I know these folks personally. I've worked with them on cases. I've worked with them on issues, let's put it that way. And they're not just good on law. They're good on politics, if you know what I mean. But yeah, Riley and Jackson, they will tell you if you have a case. They won't get paid unless they get a claim for you. Here's their number again, one more time, 205-879-5000. And here's that disclaimer. You ready? No representation made. The quality of legal service before was greater than the quality of legal service before other lawyers. Bam. I don't know how I do that fast. My lips, let's keep on moving. Let me shift gears here. We're going into number two of the triple dipper, Spendorama. So, what we're looking at right now is this. You've got a 4,155-page piece of legislation. It's so big that literally it took a cart to wheel it into the room. 4,155 pages. In order to properly get that thing vetted, every member of the U.S. Senate has to have a copy for their office. 4,155 pages. There's a potential they could vote on it as early as today. When did they get it? Today's Wednesday. They got it yesterday morning. Yesterday morning, and they're looking at 4,155 pages that did not travel through committee processes and get vetted along the way. No. It was put together by a handful of individuals in the U.S. Senate. and it was dropped on U.S. senators' offices. It had to be wheeled in by carts. 4,155 pages, $1.7 trillion, a spendorama is potentially underway right now in D.C. Why are we doing this right now? I saw Representative Kevin McCarthy, who is potentially going to be the next Speaker of the House, on one of the Fox shows last night. I forgot which one he was on. But he was basically saying, it was Laura Ingraham. He said, why are we doing this? And by the way, big story today on FoxNews.com online was that McCarthy has fully broken with McConnell on this. McCarthy is like having none of it. I don't know if McCarthy is going to be the Speaker of the House. Right now, he more than likely is. But I will say this. I question his leadership. I question some things about him being the next Speaker. But nonetheless, I appreciated what he was saying. In this particular context, he was saying, why are we doing this? He said, if we go forward with this, if McConnell joins with Schumer and has Shelby, our own Shelby, and Murkowski, and who else with it? Romney and Susan Collins. I mean, the usual suspects, right? If those join with Schumer and they get the bill passed, all we've done is allow in the last 2 weeks of a lame duck session, because they're about to go home for Christmas, by the way. The Senate's not going to be in session much longer for this year. They could pass the usual CR, a continuing resolution, which I'm not a fan of. But in this case, I would take it, because what it does is it says, hey, you know what, Republicans, you just won the House. Why should we put you in the position of having to live with the Democrat agenda all of next year? Because that's what they're doing. They're passing a budget that would be in place all of next year. It is filled with pork. It is filled with major big spending and earmarks. It's, by the way, it's also filled up with liberal agendas. Why is McConnell doing this? Who in God's name knows? But what are some things that are in that bill? Story here on Fox Business dated yesterday. Several eye-popping spending items in the $1.7 trillion omnibus bill. Well, what kind of things are we talking about? Well, for one, you've got, where'd it go? One provision states that not less than $575 million should be made available for family planning and reproductive health, including in areas where population growth threatens biodiversity or endangered species. What? You know what that is? That's Planned Parenthood kind of stuff. That's gobbledygook speak for abortion. $575 million to control population growth, basically. And that's what it says, including in areas where population growth threatens biodiversity. What they're talking about is putting $575 million into, quote-unquote, planning and reproductive health in areas where population growth threatens biodiversity or endangered species, meaning the environment's so important that if there's too many people there, we got to put more money into abortion in those areas. $575 million. That is unconscionable to me. How about this? In another section, the behemoth bill requires $410 million for border security, but not here in the Middle East. Border security in Jordan, Lebanon, Egypt, Tunisia, and Oman. Oh, there you go. But just so you know, we do have some money in there for Customs and Border Patrol. However, Representative Dan Bishop from North Carolina, he pointed out that it is clearly stated that it expressly prohibits Customs and Border Protection funding in this omnibus bill from being used to improve border security in the U.S. But it does give, how much was that in the other article? $410 million for border security in Middle Eastern countries. I guess their borders are more important. That's what I take from that. What's really maddening, though, is you're looking at this and you're saying, not only are we advancing the Democrat agenda for another year, despite the fact that we just narrowly won the House, but we're also saying, hey, by the way, y'all just live with it. Yeah, we got you the 4,155-page bill yesterday. We know you haven't had time to read it, but we expect you to vote on it. Everybody get in line, be good little men and women in the Senate, and let's get it done. It also, by the way, contains, Boomer, do you know what pollinator-friendly practices on roadsides are?
I'm not too sure.
Pollinator-friendly road practices on roadsides.
Practices on roadsides.
Well, they got $3 million for that.
Oh.
Is to plant flowers by the high sides of the highway that help bees.
Is really?
That's I
3 million dollars.
I kid you not. 3 million. Now 3 million is a drop in a bucket for right. a 1.7 trillion.
But
you can find that in the couch cushions in DC. But hey. Say it again. What? I'm sorry.
But still 3 million.
It is $3 million. You and I could do a lot for Right Side Radio with $3 million.
That's right.
Dadgum. By the way, you'll be happy to know that $3.6 million is being outlined or earmarked for a project called the Michelle Obama Trail in Georgia. That's key. About $65 million with necessary expenses associated with the restoration of Pacific salmon. Okay. Listen, it goes on and on like this. So I got... First of all, philosophically, I'm opposed to the idea of this level of deficit spending. Philosophically, I'm also opposed to the idea of this much pork. I recognize there's things that are going to be in a bill that benefit one state over another. Everybody wants their thing. But good Lord, the level of earmarking in this piece of legislation is beyond the pale. I also, by the way, though, philosophically opposed to saying, hey, we won the election, but we don't care. We're going to let soft, squishy, centrist Republicans decide to go ahead and side with the Democrats to get the Democrat agenda pushed forward. I'm not sure why Mitch McConnell is the Senate minority leader. Why is he the minority leader if he's going to help? Just go ahead and say you're a Democrat, sir. Let's call it done. What does our own Tuberville say? So Tommy Tuberville, and I haven't found what exactly he said. He was on the news today. I looked up and realized they were interviewing him on Fox News. On the big screen here in the studio. I got to find out what his latest comments were. He did go on my buddy Jeff Poor's show just a couple days ago. Story came out this morning on 1819 News. Tuberville says the $1.7 trillion spending package is a monstrosity, and he rips the fact that it includes $47 billion for Ukraine. Members of Congress have now had more than 24 hours, get with it, people, to review the language of a $1.7 trillion spending package. It's got a December 23rd deadline attached to it. Why? Because the government runs out of funding, allegedly, in 2 days. So what are they going to do? They could pass a CR, a continuing resolution. But no, right now, they're going to go ahead and work their way forward on as much of this $1.7 trillion as they can, even though it includes population control and the Michelle Obama trail and things like that. And never mind that nobody's had a chance to read it. Tuberville said, Democrats are in control. He says, for whatever reason, people across the country voted for their control for two more years. Yeah, no, sir, not really. Not in the House. So what I'm saying is this. It is time to step back and be a leader, Mitch McConnell. Although he's not listening to the show. Why am I saying that? All right, Boomer, take us to a break, brother. We'll do that right now. We'll come right back and sort of wrap up some information about this because, boy, I tell you what, they are excoriating Richard Shelby right now in the conservative press. I'll tell you about that and why when we get back. And then top of the hour, the Grand Council with my brethren, Jeff Poor and Dale Jackson. Y'all stay tuned. We'll be right back. And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio, solid conservative, just plain right, saving the world one soundbite at a time. Hey, listen, I got to tell you, Senator Richard Shelby has been known to be a conservative at times, to be a moderate most times, I would say. He has certainly been in office for a long time, but he's also he's been in an extremely powerful position, a major player on the Senate Appropriations Committee. Well, conservative media, in this case, I've got a story from Breitbart. Conservative media has been calling him out right now because of what we're seeing with the level of pork spending that he's put in. And by the way, you know, I get it. And on the one hand, I'm glad to see Alabama may get some things, but at what cost? So here's a story. The largest number of earmarks in the entire $1.7 trillion bill is $656 million worth by Senator Richard Shelby as he leaves office. It's a gift. It's the thanks for your time. You're retiring, so put you a bunch of stuff in there that you can go have your name put on a building. That's what's happening. I mean, it's everything from $13 million for the town of Abbeville to extend their, you know, airport runway, $26 million for the Tuscaloosa National Airport runway. You got $100 million for a bridge. You've got $200 million for the state port. You've got $200 million for the state port. $50 million for a revolving loan fund to benefit the city of Mobile. That's interesting. $35 million for Marion Military Institute, which is a private school, by the way. $45 million just for the University of Alabama at Tuscaloosa, undesignated, although I also see $76 million for the UAB School of Medicine, and $50 million for University of Alabama, again, for a permanent endowment fund to support the recruitment and retention of faculty. Wow. Wow. $35 million for Spring Hill College, which I also believe is a private school. $35 million. It goes on and on. These are all things that got put into the bill by Senator Richard Shelby as he leaves office. And I'm telling you right now, I think it was Larry Kudlow who came out the other day on Tucker Carlson, I believe, and just excoriated. He said basically Senator Shelby is ruining any potential conservative record he has. I don't think he cares. Other things that are in that bill, though, like, for instance, did you know, Postmillennial is reporting this one, although I've also got a story on Fox, $7.5 million set aside for LGBTQ projects in Biden's massive spending bill. I kid you not. A whopping $7.5 million have been earmarked for LGBTQ projects such as the LGBTQIA+ Pride Centers and the American LGBTQ+ Museum in New York City. Well, that's important. Then there's $750,000 in there for LGBT and gender nonconforming housing in Albany, New York. Housing. $750,000 for LGBT and gender nonconforming housing. What in God's name does that even mean? How about this? There's a further $1 million going to an organization called Zora's House in Ohio. It's a co-working and community space for women and gender expansive people of color. Boomer, you and your cis white male, just don't say anything.
I'm just gonna sit over here with my hands crossed.
You're just a cis white male.
I'm just a cis white male.
You're the lowest strata of society, a cis white male. Oh. There's also $2 million in there to build the Great Blacks in Wax Museum in Baltimore. Blacks in Wax. I mean, clever name, but wow. Okay, so that's all in this bill. Well, just so you know, there are people pushing back, and I don't know to what degree they're going to be able to accomplish the pushback, but I appreciate the fact that they're saying something at least. So Representative Chip Roy, who I admire, a member of the House Freedom Caucus, a group of 13 GOP House lawmakers on Monday vowed to retaliate against their Republican colleagues in the Senate who vote for the massive omnibus spending package before the lame duck Democrat Congress expires. Story here on National Review. We are obliged to inform you, they said in a letter, that if any omnibus passes in the remaining days of this Congress, we will oppose and whip opposition to any legislative priority of those senators who vote for this bill, including the Republican leader. They're calling out McConnell directly. They go on to say they will oppose any rule, any consent request, any suspension voice vote, any roll call vote of any such Senate bill, and they will otherwise do anything in their power to thwart even the smallest legislative or policy efforts of those senators. Senate Republicans, they say, have the 41 votes necessary to stop this bill and should do so now and show the Americans who elected you that they were not wrong in doing so. Anyway, that's where we are right now. It's a spend-o-rama, literally. It's a feeding frenzy right now. How much can we get? How much can we get? How much can we get? And that's what we're looking at. I'll just be honest. I find this to be almost disheartening as you watch what they're doing. And truthfully, when you see them voting on this legislation, you have to wonder, are they really the people they said they were? I mean, has McConnell just gone ahead and said, yeah, you know, it says Republican, but I'm an independent man. I do whatever I feel like. That's how it feels. That's exactly how it feels. There is a complete lack of control right now on spend. We're seeing some things happening for the good on the social policy issues. But when it comes to the fiscal conservatism, the idea of, you know, spending within your means, or at the very least trying to reduce the current level of debt and spend, we're not seeing that at all. And there is zero reason, y'all, zero. Zero reason why McConnell should so completely disrespect McCarthy and the House, who just won their election when he didn't. And I, you know, somebody pointed out, and by the way, my text line has blown up, just completely blown up. I'm going to have to get back to some of these texts here in a little while, Booms. But somebody pointed out that they had a quote from McConnell in the past saying that he prefers to stay in the minority because it's just easier. Well, you got that. It's just easier when you don't actually have to govern. I remember guys in Montgomery who were not saying they wanted to go back, but when the Republicans finally took back the Alabama State House in 2010, there were those guys who had been down there kind of holding the fort in the minority, and they said that literally it was easier. All you had to do was kind of stand up and fight. But when we won the majority, they had to start governing. Well, right now, McConnell is choosing not to govern. He is a de facto Democrat at the moment. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio, coming back with a Grand Council with Jeff Poore and Dale Jackson. Y'all stay tuned. We'll be right back. Right Side ruffians out there, you are listening to Right Side Radio, solid conservative, just plain right.
You're listening live to Right Side Radio with Phil Williams. It's hard to go wrong when you're on the right side. Right Side Radio, solid conservative, and just plain right.
Alabama's syndicated news talk leader, Right Side Radio. Phil Williams here live in the Right Side studios. Man, we got the local, the state, the national covering down on all the issues. And like the dude just said, solid, conservative, and just plain right. All right, well, it's Wednesday at 4 o'clock. You know what that means. We go to a thing we call the Grand Council every week. I bring on two of my brethren in talk radio who've been doing this longer than I have. And we ping each other with questions. We see what we get in terms of responses. And we don't even always agree, but we still love each other when it's done. So let me just call the roll real quick from Cumulus Broadcasting's WVNN 92.5 FM 770 FM program director, morning show guy, also writes for Yellowhammer. Dale Jackson, is you here?
Yeah, you got most of that right. What?
Okay. All right. Hey, and then also our buddy Jeff Poore from FM Talk 106.5 down in the coastal regions of our state and the executive editor for 1819 News. Is you here, Jeff Poore?
I am present.
You are indeed, and we appreciate it. All right. That being said, I pronounce a quorum. Hit it, Boomer.
Assemble the Grand Council.
Ta-da! Ta-da! All right, here we go. All right, fellas, you know the deal. We ping each other with questions. We don't even know the questions in advance, and I'm going to say, Dale Jackson, start us off.
All right, this one is not a very sexy question, but I think it's an interesting one nonetheless. Rex Reynolds was on Capital Journal. He talked a little bit about this current state of Alabama's budget. We've been hearing a bunch of different things, whether we're going to have to rewrite the tax code, or maybe we'll just do a one-time rebate and call everyone lucky to get that. And now it really seems like maybe we're backing off that too, because of the current state of the American economy. We got to, you know, have enough money to give money to Ukraine, and we got to print enough money for all the illegals we're bringing in. So maybe the economy isn't going in the direction we want it to. Maybe we hold off on doing some rebates and tax reforms and things like that. Is this the switch part of the bait and switch?
Wow. What a question. Jeff, you go first.
I wouldn't read into it too much. I think they're going to do something. They're not going to get away with not giving any of this back to the taxpayer. Every other state surrounding Alabama has done some kind of tax cut, tax holiday. They got to do something. They're not going to get away with rolling it back and say, we need to save this money for later. There's just no way, not that we've gone this far. I think it's just a question of how much is it going to be.
Yeah, and I agree with that. I mean, we've had on my show, and I know you guys have had on your shows, I've had State Senator Orr, who's in leadership in the Senate. We've had Nathaniel Ledbetter, who's future Speaker of the House, and other members of the body have all come on and said, oh, yeah, we're doing something. And to back off of it now, it'd be more than a bait and switch. It would be like saying we caught you in a lie. So your own question, Dale, what are your thoughts on it?
I think it seems very much like a, for lack of a better term, bait and switch. I think that might be where all of this might be heading. I don't know if that's 100% true or not, but it'll be interesting to see how more people react as we get closer and closer to actually being able to do something. I think you guys are right. People will be mad about it, but we'll see. I mean, there just doesn't really seem to be many penalties for doing stuff like that in the state of Alabama right now.
Well, and I'll be honest with you, there's never been a time when we were more appropriately poised to be able to give something back to the people. If they don't do it right now, then they're just bold-faced liars. All right, tell you what, I'll take the next question real quick. Birmingham Southern, private school, the same school that last year was leaning on its private bona fides and saying, you know, that whole vaccine passport thing, we're allowed to charge more for an unvaccinated student. We can oppress people like that because we're private. Well, suddenly they want public funds. They came out and asked for $37.5 million from the taxpayers from county, city, and state. Are we going to wind up seeing Birmingham Southern get state money? Jeff, you first.
Probably there'll be a push for it. I guess if Jabba Wagner's pushing for it, that's what it sounds like to me, Jim Carnes. I thought some lawmakers are very skeptical. What the fear is, if Birmingham Southern today, then, you know, what do you – well, who's coming with their handout tomorrow? I heard Alabama State, Alabama A&M. That you know, you give it to Birmingham Southern, you got to do it. But I mean, they bailed out the World Games. Why would they bail out Birmingham Southern?
Wow. Dale, your thoughts?
I don't see how they could get it done. I mean, you were a Alabama State Senator at one time, and I just got to ask you, you know, if Birmingham comes hat in hand and says, help us out, guys, I just don't know why the rest of the state would go, yeah, okay. I just don't understand why they would do it. But Jeff makes the argument that they've done it plenty of other times and there'll be other places that want to do something else. And maybe they do, but I don't see what sense it makes. Is this going to be a loan or are we just given a gift? Which is it going to be?
And that's exactly right. And that's the thing is right now, nobody has given an economic impact study to the public to show what the loss would mean, or for that matter, what the retention would mean. No one has talked about whether this is a loan or whether it's a grant. No one has talked about whether there's any clawback provisions that say you have to do certain things differently since they're claiming, Birmingham Southern claims, it's their own fault that they're in this position. Bad accounting, they say, and a big building campaign that got away from them. So why they're not doing a bond issue like most colleges would do, I don't know. But all said and done, I think it's bad form, and I think we better be very cautious about every. By the way, we did have things in the budgets, like Marion Military Institute, a private school. You've got at one point, Barber Motorsports was getting some funding from the state, but those were couched under economic development and other, but they were small by comparison. There's $37 million? Good Lord. So I say no. Jeff, what's your question, man?
Earlier today, Speaker Designate Ledbetter announced last round of committee assignments. Two interesting committee assignments that caught my eye. Number one, for other reasons, Paul Lee's going to stay on Health Committee as the chairman. That's, you know, that could be consequential later on if we try to roll back what State Health Officer does. But also, this is probably where y'all will be interested, Terry Collins will retain her chairmanship as the Education Policy Committee chairwoman, I think probably to the chagrin of the AEA and others. But seeing that, does that make you optimistic about school choice given Terry Collins' positions in the past?
Dale, you first.
I'm optimistic and very pro school choice. But I think what they're going to do is, I hate to use this term again because it sounds like I'm being lazy here, but a little bait and switch on us to where the AEA goes, yeah, we'll take this part of school choice. So I think something will come. We'll get the camel's nose under the tent, sort of like the medical marijuana stuff, although that comes in suppository form, so maybe it's a little different there. But I do think I think the school choice stuff looks a little better with Terry Collins there. I'll just be honest with you.
It does, and I like Terry Collins a lot personally. I will say this: last year there were certain school choice measures that didn't even see the light of day. It didn't matter who was carrying them. In fact, when you look at the fact that Charlotte Meadows was basically drawn out of her own district, and she was the school choice leader in the House at the time, and then you look at the fact that Del Marsh was the former pro tem, and he couldn't get his own bill out of committee. You have to wonder, is there any actual impetus going in the House or Senate in Alabama for school choice? And I hope that Terry's going to have some backing and some chutzpah to go get it done. But we'll have to wait and see. Jeff, your own question. What are your thoughts?
No, I do think it's important. The AEA really, my understanding is just they didn't want her back in that position. She'd been a thorn in their side. And it came at the last moment, which is curious to me. But I think it's a good sign. And I also think this, there's enough clamoring for school choice. You got to get something. They may call it school choice. It may not be the Arizona bill that everybody wants. But they're going to try to give – they're going to try to throw a bone to that constituency just to appease them, I believe.
All right. Well, we'll wait and see. Hey, let me ask you with about 30 seconds just quickly, are you guys encouraged or discouraged by the appointments for the House committees right now by Nathaniel Ledbetter? Jeff?
I feel like it's about where we thought it would be. I'm a little surprised by Rex Reynolds, a good buddy of mine, getting the general fund. It's curious how that's going to go. And I don't know what to make of Joe Lovern as Rules Committee chairman at all. That's really a head-scratcher.
How about you, Dale?
I'm not too surprised. I mean, nothing too crazy. The Terry Collins thing is, I think, the best thing happening right now. So we'll take that little small victory and hope that we can ride it to some form of school choice and then go from there.
All right, fellas, we're going to take a break right now. We'll come right back for round two of the Grand Council. We're on with FM Talk 106.5's and 1819 News' Jeff Poor and Dale Jackson from WVNN up in Huntsville, also writes for Yellowhammer. Y'all stay tuned. We will be right back. And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio, covering all of North Alabama. Solid conservative, just plain right. Saving the world one soundbite at a time. All right, we're in round two of the Grand Council with Jeff Poor from FM Talk 106.5 and 1819 News and Dale Jackson from 92.5 FM 770 AM WVNN and Yellowhammer. All right, listen, I think, Dale, you got the next question, bud. What you got?
Who looks more ridiculous? Zelensky in his green military fatigue or military gear, or Fetterman in his shorts and sweatshirt? That's not my serious question, but I just interested to know which one.
I will have to say the more ridiculous of the two is Fetterman, because even though Zelensky's, you know, at a press conference at the White House in what amounts to a sweatshirt and you know, fatigue pants, he still sports it pretty well. But Fetterman always looked like a lump, like he rolled out of bed like a college student, found something that was the least dirty and put it on and went somewhere. But I did see something on Twitter earlier. A guy I follow said, you know, you're $47 billion in the bag when you just roll up to the door in sweatpants and get your money. Jeff, you chime in, bud. Did we lose Jeff?
For ridiculous, probably. I'd say probably Fetterman. I don't know. Zelensky just looks like a second world country, I don't know, despot.
Jeff didn't like that question. So here's my real question for you. In light of Zelensky getting this giant gift, what's the best Christmas present you've ever received?
Well, it wasn't $47 billion. I can assure you of that.
What?
Jeff, he's just taken over with, apparently Dale didn't have any real questions today. He just wants to.
I knew that would bother Jeff.
He always does this. He always does this. Last minute, he doesn't think this out. This is what he always does. You can tell he's always
Dale,
I put more thought into it than you think because I was just messing with Jeff. So I just want to know what made Jeff happy when he was a little boy.
We're going to move on.
That's all I'm having to do is show Adele Jackson.
Oh, my gosh. All right, listen, I'm jumping in before we get into our row here. My question. Back to real stuff. Thank you very much. $1.7 trillion, 4,155 pages. The omnibus spending bill got dropped in senators' laps at 1:30 a.m. in yesterday morning, and they're allegedly pushing it forward for a potential vote as early as today or tomorrow. Are they going to get this passed despite the fact that conservative Republicans are saying stop and hold fast? Dale?
Don't you know it's Christmas? They only have so many days. Richard Shelby cannot stay up there that many more days. He needs to come home and have plum pudding, okay? That's what needs to happen. So they need to get this passed. Who cares what's in it? Just pass it so these guys can come home. They've worked so hard.
Don't read what's in it. And by the way, how can you read what's in it? You'd have to literally read a page every 2 minutes for the next 6 days to be able to get
it. I love the idea behind this. Is we've had an entire year to mess with this, but we must get it done in the next 3 days or the country ends. Hurry. Okay. Give Zelensky a bunch of money out the door.
And there was truly no committee process for people to vet this in advance. They dropped the bill outside of committee process and said, bam, we're going to a vote.
But the answer to your question is yes, they will get it done.
Oh, my gosh. All right. Your thoughts, Jeff?
Yeah, they'll easily get it done. It was kind of designed to get done this way. How many times have we seen this play before where we were at the last minute before the holidays and they're voting at the last minute? It shouldn't be that way, but you get Richard Shelby at $650 million with the earmarks. This is what you get.
And there it is. And by the way, in case you guys hadn't already seen some of the strange things that are in it, you'll be happy to know that there's like $715 million to help with gay and non-binary housing and things like that. It's wonderful. all the goodness in there. Jeff, your question, what do you got?
Well, what kind of tangential to this is the earmark question. And I am curious. So earmarks are back, and we see what the effect they have on the process. Should they be back?
No. I recognize there's going to be times when you're fighting for something that your constituents would benefit from, and it's going to be like, okay, if you got something done for a highway system that happens to run through Alabama, did that mean it was truly an earmark, or was it because you're helping the highway system? But here's the thing. Earmarks are sometimes a necessary evil, but they've become more evil than necessary. And I really believe that we've got to get away from this massive amount of earmarking because all we're doing is seeing pork. I mean, we're watching salmon get plussed up in the Pacific and coral reefs getting plussed up in the Atlantic, and we're watching gay and non-binary housing in Albany, New York, and the Blacks Wax Museum in where was that, Philadelphia or whatever. It's ridiculous, and we've got to get away from this kind of pork-level spending, or at least require some measure of justification as to why it benefits the common good.
Here's my question. What is gay housing? Do you have to, like, go in the back door or something?
Let's just go ahead and pretend.
Hey, come on,
let's
man.
Go ahead and pretend you didn't do that on my show, Dale Jackson.
It's my last show. This is the last thing I'm doing in the whole year. I got to get it all in, guys.
My gosh. Oh, my gosh. All right. Well, listen, fellas, in case I have not said it to you most recently, I appreciate you. And Merry Christmas to both of you and yours, even you, Dale Jackson.
Well, thank you, sir. I appreciate that. Merry Christmas, Jeff.
Merry Christmas. Sorry, Dale, ruined your show.
don't worry. I've got audience members out there that are so in tune with Dale that they're like, hey, he said it. Yeah.
Oh, man.
All right, fellas, appreciate you. Merry Christmas. Oh, wow.
Merry Christmas.
Good times, as always. I love the Grand Council, though. That cracks me up. You know how we started that, Boomer? Did I ever tell you how we started that? We had a technical glitch the very first time that I was hosting from, you know, from my location. The power went out. Literally, the power went out. There was no broadcast capability. And so I called Dale on the phone and said, dude, the power went out. And he goes, I got it. And he ran down to the studio in Athens and just jumped on the air. And then he calls me and goes, hey, I'm going to dial you in and Jeff, and we're just going to talk. And I said, okay.
Sounds good.
So yeah, so that's what we did. But we wound up doing kind of a mini grand council without meaning to for about an hour. We just went back and forth. What'd you see this article? Yeah, I saw the article. What'd you think about that? I didn't like that. And we just talked back and forth. And I thought, that actually was very cool. So the Grand Council was birthed out of a technical glitch from a power outage. And here we are today.
That's awesome.
With sound effects and everything.
With all the sound effects.
And moderately inappropriate more, comments from Dale Jackson and all of it. and angry outbursts from Jeff Poor.
Against Dale. I'll let you.
He always does this. All right, folks. You stay tuned. We're going to come right back. Number three of the Triple Dipper. That's right. I'm getting all three in, plus all the guests at the Grand Council. The Obfuscation Nation. This is maddening. You're going to want to hear this one. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Y'all stay tuned. We'll be right back. You Right Side ruffians out there, you are listening to Right Side Radio, solid conservative, just plain right. And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio, solid conservative, just plain right, covering down on some ground in the northern part of the great state of Alabama. I'm talking about we are down south of Birmingham, up north of Huntsville, Tuscaloosa, back over to Gadsden, parts of Georgia, Tennessee, and Mississippi, thrown in just for good measure. You know what's funny is if you're watching the live stream, I've gotten to where I do my hands in the air to show, to remind myself where on the map I'm pointing to, Georgia, Tennessee, Mississippi.
Got to like, go through the list.
I got it. Yeah, it helps me to run through the list. Hey, I got to tell you something. Just Love Coffee Cafe. I'm going to give you a chance. All right, this is a secret. Don't tell anybody I told you this. There's a chance for you to be a hero tomorrow morning. There's a chance for all y'all Right Side ruffians to be like the man or the woman at the office, to be the one. Here's why. You can go to Just Love Coffee Cafe at one of two locations in our listening area, Hughes Road in Madison out towards City Hall, or South Parkway in Huntsville down yonder by Whole Foods. But you can go in there in the morning and not only feed your face with some amazing food, or for that matter, get yourself a great cup of coffee or a cappuccino or a latte or an espresso. You can also get what they call their barista box. Boomers over there whispering, barista box. That was like subliminal suggestions, yeah. Right there. A barista box, basically, you can get some of their award-winning dry roast coffee. They can grind the beans fresh, make you a big old steaming cup of coffee, but they can make a barista box of coffee, and you take it to work with you, and you announce when you get there, you have come in with Just Love Coffee Cafe's award-winning coffee for everybody. Nobody has to drink out of the mold-infested coffee maker in the old break room. They got the real stuff, the hot Java that can only come from Just Love Coffee Cafe. So listen, do me a favor, check them out. And when you go there, two locations, Hughes Road in Madison, South Parkway in Huntsville, tell them you heard about it on the Right Side Radio. I get the biggest kick out of them saying, man, another bunch of folks came in and said they heard about it on your show. That just cracks me up, but I love it. Support them. They're one of our sponsors. They're Just awesome. Love Coffee Cafe. They are awesome.
Mm. There's some really funny text over here.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know if you've gotten to see him.
No, what do you got?
Well, there's one of them. Paul from Athens was like, hey, things being the way they are today, you may need to change your slogan to identify you and Boomer. So he wants us to say solid conservative and just cis white.
I embrace my cis whiteness.
It could be solid conservative and just plain right and cis white.
That's awesome. Paul from Athens. John from Huntsville says Dale's going on the naughty list. Says Santa Claus with the rainbow sweatshirt. There you go. What else we got here? I can't find. Where was that one you had? You had
Kenny.
Something. Kenny from Elkmont? Yeah, it was Kenny from Elkmont. He says, well, that was a highly inappropriate remark by Dale, and I am so angry I didn't think of it first.
Oh, that's funny.
Oh, gosh. We got comments coming in. Wiley from Gunnersville, he was talking about the Richard Shelby thing. He says, Richard Shelby made sure we got Doug Jones when he publicly said he could not support Roy Moore, and thousands of Shelby supporters didn't go to the polls. Why is anybody surprised at what he's doing now? I get it. I agree. It was an amazing time. I was actually the Republican Party chairman in Etowah County at the time and the state senator in Etowah County, and that meant that I was both the senator and party chairman for Roy Moore's personal domicile. So I was openly supportive of his candidacy when he got the nomination, and just watched that get torpedoed. By the way, the number of write-in ballots that Richard Shelby encouraged people to do, the number of write-in ballots in that election was I think it was a record in the state of Alabama, and it almost accounted for literally the entire amount by which Roy Moore lost the race. Mm. That's my rough recollection, but I need to go back and look at it. Charlie from Huntsville says, if Michelle and Barack, we're talking about that Michelle Obama trail that the spending bill is going to have in it, millions of dollars to build the Michelle Obama trail in Georgia. If Michelle and Barack would take a hike, the money for the trail would be worth it. Oh, Lord. Phones are ringing. And by the way, the lines are open. If you want to call in, the number here is 833-687-4448. That's 833-68-RIGHT. That's our phone number. Text us. Call us if you want to. I'll take those calls. I'm going to jump into number three of the Triple Dipper, though, here. The Obfuscation Nation. What is that? Okay, big old fat word you can use on a Scrabble board. Obfuscate. It basically means you have rendered something obscure, unclear, or unintelligible. You've done something to bewilder someone. In other words, like you ask them a question and they don't really give you the truth. They're obfuscating. They sort of talk around it. They didn't really tell you anything, but they did not tell you anything. It's like, I don't know what just happened. Well, that happens all the time, it seems like. And you can't get the straight story. So I've got this little segment here I'm just calling the Obfuscation Nation. Have I got a caller on the line? Well, I said call in, so I guess I had to take the call and honor the fact that somebody called. Line one, Bob from Hartsel. Hey, Bob, how you doing?
How you doing, sir? This is what you get when you go with a Katie Britt, who is supported by McConnell and by Shelby, who both screwed Alabama. They screwed Mo Brooks. And I guess the people don't give a crap about that. But I tell you what, the legislation in Alabama ought to do, that at least take his name off everything that's in Alabama. They ought to have Republicans get their butt off down there in Mobile. Get around his house. Do like the Democrats are doing to us. This guy ain't no but a low-down scumbag, and I don't care about Tuberville. He don't say jack squat about Shelby. He ain't got the guts to do it. He'll say something about the bill, but he won't say nothing about Shelby doing it.
Well, don't beat around the bush, Bob. Tell me how you feel.
Well, I'll tell you this. You know what John Fetterman and Katie Britt have in common?
Oh, Lord.
They both scrubbed the Black Lives Media off their websites.
Okay.
And that's just enough out there to keep them off.
All right, Bob.
And that's the way I feel about it.
Thanks for the call, man. Appreciate you.
Yes, sir.
All right. I'm pretty sure Bob was fired up. What do you think? All right. And folks, listen, I got news. You're welcome to your opinion. I have watched Senator Shelby from afar. There are things he's done well. I will say that. But I'll be honest with you. This last move, helping get this spending bill through so he can walk out the door and retire with $656 million in major earmarks for the state of Alabama, is fiscally irresponsible, and it's not the way to end things. If he's going to get a building named after him again at the University of Alabama or somewhere else in the state, I just have to look at it and go, was it really worth putting us in this position? And I don't think it is. All right, Obfuscation Nation. Let me jump over to it real quick. Got a storyline. Where did it go? Oh, here it is, my notes. So I guess I have to ask the question. In Detroit, how do you measure success? Well, if you ask the question, can a black man be successful in Detroit? Well, they would get angry if you ask that question, because by merely asking the question, you're implying they can't. So when you name a school after a successful black man, doesn't that honor the fact that someone could pull themselves up by their bootstraps and do good things in America? Oh, wait, Ben Carson? That's not, he doesn't meet the ideals. Okay, so here's the deal. When you ask these questions of the school board, like, oh, why are you scrubbing the name of Ben Carson off of a public school in Detroit? Well, it was the schoolhouse of Benjamin Carson High School of Science and Medicine. The Detroit Public School Community District has literally decided to remove his name from the building. Pray tell, why would that be? Was he not successful? Well, he was. Is he not from Detroit? Well, he is. Did he not, you know, come up through poverty? Yeah, well, he did. Here's the deal. Since 2018, this article from Human Events, dated 2 days ago, says since 2018, the call to purge the good doctor was typified by the scurrilous charge of a school board member who claimed that naming the high school after Dr. Benjamin Carson was synonymous with having Trump's name on our school in blackface. Do you hear what I'm saying? Black Lives Matter had their way with the city of Detroit. Black Lives Matter was able to force their way in and create all kinds of havoc in the name of trying to advance the cause of black people, allegedly. But when you have someone like Dr. Carson, who the article points out was raised by a single mother in a gritty part of the Motor City, Detroit, who matriculated through the Detroit public schools and managed to go to Yale and then the University of Michigan Medical School despite his family's poverty, and he rose to become one of Johns Hopkins Hospital's chief of pediatric neurosurgery and a presidential candidate and a secretary of housing and urban development, but he doesn't quote unquote reflect Detroiters, then what does reflect Detroiters? And I got news. It's a mixed bag. When you ask for public opinion, you get things like, you know, we had to scrub him because he didn't represent us. All right. Well, Dr. Carson's been very gracious about this. But I'll point out, though, that one teacher literally said that she actually takes his picture down. She doesn't want his name up on his face up on the wall during Black History Month. She replaces it with somebody else. But then another one said, just to the contrary, our kids need Dr. Carson's inspiration. My poverty rate here in my school is 85%. Our kids need to realize they can sit in this crazy science class and they can come out a doctor. Well, so what's the truth? What represents Detroiters? And I would say that, you know, Detroit has a long history of industrial superiority. Detroit has been a model in the past of a city that can get it done. Detroit has been a place in the past where amazing things happen, that capitalism actually works, and that people can actually get a job and make a living wage. And for them to say that Dr. Ben Carson somehow doesn't represent Detroiters, and that the idea that this person can literally say on the school board that putting his name on that school is like having Trump's name on the school in blackface, that, I mean, first of all, I just find that to be not only offensive, but I look at it and think, you don't even know what success is anymore. You've lost sight of what it means to be successful. They have so politicized the idea of success through their means that they can't allow anyone else to be seen as successful in the manner in which America was designed to make people successful. Dr. Ben Carson, in my opinion, is the American dream, and they ought to name more schools after him. All right, tell you what, golly, Boomer, I got one article out of that whole segment so far. I tell you what, you know what? I'm going to do one more before we go to the break, Booms. I'm going to do this. I got an article here from The Federalist. I'm still in obfuscation nation, but these stories are kind of all over the board. Here's one for you. Twitter is at the forefront right now of the news cycle about misinformation and clouding the truth. So when I say obfuscation nation and they make things hard to see, you have to recognize some of that's been intentional, right? How about this? One of the things that we are also learning now is that there are a number of former FBI and CIA employees that are working at Twitter. Oh, really? Why would that be? Well, article here from The Federalist says, are the FBI and CIA agents sheep-dipped? Sheep-dipped is a phrase used to mean someone comes off the rolls at their active duty component, like the CIA, the FBI, or the U.S. military, and they go to work in an executive capacity. But secretly, they're really on the military's payroll or the CIA's payroll. they're doing what's it's called sheep dipping. In the intel word, it's a term of art. It basically describes a tactic where they're literally still doing their intel work, but they're in a hidden capacity, sort of in a non-attribution level capacity. We have literally, I think there's still 14 employees on the payroll since the Elon Musk purge who did work at the FBI and CIA, to include that guy who's already gone now, James Baker, who used to be the FBI's chief general counsel. And you have to ask yourself, why? And, you know, corporations need security too, I get it. But when you look at the level of misinformation that we've been seeing from Twitter and the level of suppression, and we're even finding stories just now that Twitter was helping the U.S. military with psyops in other parts of the world, you have to wonder, do we have people who are technically still on the rolls at one of the acronym agencies or even the military who are at work at Twitter getting things done? It's a little scary when you stop and think about it. Obfuscation Nation. Boomer, take us to a break, bro. We'll do that right now. We'll come right back and wrap up the day. It's Camel Day. We may have to play the camel when we get back just to end the day. Boomer, what do you think? I say yes. Boomer says yes. All right, Boomer, you cis white male, take us to a break. Bill Williams,
yes, sir.
Right Side Radio. We'll be right back. We are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Solid, conservative, and just plain right. Hey, folks, listen, before we go too much further, I got to tell you, ZLA Solutions, I've been talking to those guys here most recently. They just had the most amazing year they've ever had. And it's because they are doing such a great job of getting jobs and people lined up. So if you're looking for a job personally, let me just suggest to you, ZLA Solutions has got it going on. You can go to their website, ZLAUSA.com. And they've got jobs posted all over North Alabama. Good jobs, big name employers. But here's the thing. If you are an employer and you need to fill out the ranks of your own workforce, I don't care if it's, you know, onesies and twosies, kind of niche skills, or if it's going to be a whole shift of people, they can help you. The recruiting, the background checks, the drug testing, all of it. ZLA Solutions at ZLAUSA.com. They are doing it everywhere. Their motto is, at ZLA, we don't make it, we make it better. That's their goal in life, is to help you make your business better. So check them out, ZLA Solutions at ZLAUSA.com. And by the way, tell them you heard about it on Right Side Radio. They've been telling me, Boomer, so ZLA says they've been multiple times here in the last week had people go, oh, man, I've been hearing about you on that Right Side Radio. And they even had a truck driver pulling into their parking lot recently and look up at the sign and go, so this is ZLA. I've been hearing about you all every day when I drive. But
that's pretty cool.
That is pretty cool. Yeah, always tell them. You heard about it on the Right Side. Hey, last story that I'll get to, I guess, today in the Obfuscation Nation. You know, you just have to wonder what's going on in the White House right now with regards to the Hunter Biden laptop. Is it panic? Is it denial? Is it just, you know, wait and see? What? Or are they actively working to try and keep the story under wraps? Because it's not under wraps anymore. Well, Karine Jean-Pierre, the glass ceiling breaking, you know, press secretary for the Biden administration, she was asked recently at a press gathering, quote, here's the actual question. The latest Twitter files show the intel community was actively involved in discrediting the Hunter Biden laptop story. Does it bother the president or those at the White House that a government agency like the FBI was involved in suppressing a legitimate news story? Her only answer? Again, I'm just going to refer you to the FBI. I'm not going to comment from here about that. The FBI won't answer about it. Ain't nobody answering about it. This is more than obfuscation. This is a dodge. This is a complete dodge. Well, the Twitter files began in early December, December 2nd, and they show deliberate efforts behind the scenes at Twitter to censor stories about Hunter Biden's laptop. They call it the laptop from hell, the contents of which implicate the president's son in corruption, influence peddling, profiteering, all those things. And you can't get a straight answer out of anybody in D.C. about it, much less the FBI. So for the White House to go, well, we're referring to the FBI, you know what's going to wind up happening? The FBI is going to say, well, we have to refer you back to the White House. It's you talk about obfuscation, it's a complete dodge. There was a recent installment of the Twitter files that came out just this past Friday, shows that federal agencies, including the FBI, the Department of Homeland Security, they were all partnered up with contractors to do what it says were pressuring Twitter to moderate content. And so you have to look at this and go, all right, obfuscation, or is it just flat-out psyops on the American people? That's what it feels like. And when you find out they got a bunch of CIA and FBI guys working there at Twitter, you have to wonder, how much training do they have in psyops? Well, apparently they got a pretty significant amount. All right, listen, it's going to be a cold one coming up. The temperature starts dropping tomorrow, I believe. And we're looking at temperatures in the teens. Make sure you cover up those pipes, bring the pets in, do all the things to weatherproof your vehicle, because we're looking at what one report is looking at right now on Fox. Says it's a National Weather Service calling this a once-in-a-generation storm for certain parts of the United States. Here in Alabama, it's going to be freaking cold, is what I know. Freaking cold.
Really cold.
Really, really cold. All right, Boomer, you cis white male.
Ah,
blessings on you, man.
You too.
And we'll be back here tomorrow at 2 o'clock. You guys have an amazing night as we get things going, and I hope you got all your Christmas shopping done, because that's about over.
It's about over. You better get on it, if not.
If you ain't there yet, then you're just writing the little IOU and sticking it in the card and calling it done. All right, folks. Right Side Radio. Solid, conservative, and just plain right. We'll see you tomorrow. Ruffians out there, you are listening to Right Side Radio. Solid, conservative, just plain right.